you left me for some one who is your love light shining bright. Will you love me or leave me tonight? Susie baby, don't you know that I love you and want you so? Come back baby, come back home. Say you love me and never again roam. Baby, I love you. Say you'll come back and love me too. Don't you love me? Gone away. I've been lonely, alone each day.
That recording was Susie Baby, written by the gentleman who sang it, namely Bobby V. I have enjoyed his music for so long, and it is such a pleasure to have him on the phone right now.
I'm here, Ronnie. Good to speak with you.
We did it once before. We did a three-hour show together back in the year 2002.
Right. My voice is just coming back from that. We talked so long, I lost my voice for 3 years.
You were willing to do an extra hour.
It was great fun.
It certainly was. And we're going to discuss a lot of the songs that we did back then, because a lot of people didn't hear that original show. The song we just heard, Susie Baby, on Soma Records, and that label I remember from the Muleskinner Blues by the Fendermen and Liar Liar by the Castaways, Minneapolis or Minnesota. Were you from Minnesota at that time?
I actually was born and raised in North Dakota, but right across the river from Minnesota.
What can you tell us about Susie Baby?
I grew up in a musical family, and rock and roll was, you know, alive and well in North Dakota, too. I went to a lot of country shows growing up, and I remember the first rock and roll acts that came through my area, Gene Vincent and Buddy Knox and the Rhythm Orchids and Eddie Cochran, and I heard radio change from country music to rock and roll. And Susie Baby I wrote in 1959, as you said, on Soma Records, a little regional record, and it did well enough to get me a recording contract with Liberty. So in actual fact, it was on Liberty. On the bounce, if you would, from the success that we had locally. It got up into the national charts in about 73 or 74, somewhere around there, Billboard charts, and so that's where it started for me.
Were you trying to imitate Buddy Holly? Was there a Buddy Holly influence on that particular record, would you say?
Well, there certainly was an influence. He was my Elvis, if you will. I loved all the Buddy Holly music, and I still do. I've done a couple of tribute albums to him, one called I Remember Buddy Holly in 1962, and I did another one on the 40th anniversary in 1999 with my sons. I've got three sons and a daughter, and my sons all play in. I still love his music.
Susie Baby came after the plane crash, didn't it?
Yeah, the plane crash was February 3rd, 1959.
We're going to sort of backtrack a bit now. My own personal feeling is that if it didn't happen this way, it would have happened another way. I still believe you would have become the star that you became. But as it turned out, it happened in this particular fashion. How did you find out about Buddy Holly and Ritchie Valens and the Big Bopper? Something happened that was kind of a defining moment in your career at that point.
First of all, it was the first major rock and roll package show to come through our area, so there was a lot of talk about it and a lot of you know, radio advertising, marketing, and I had a ticket for the show. I found out about the plane crash around lunchtime. I was a sophomore in high school.
February, I think it was, right?
It was February 3rd, 1959.
Right, okay.
And I had gone home for lunch, and I was listening to the radio, and they were talking about the show, and I thought they were, you know, just plugging it for the evening, but they were talking about the plane crash, and I was stunned. Went back to school that afternoon, and that was the topic of conversation. And after school, the radio station that was promoting the show, they had met with the remaining acts, which were Dion and the Belmonts and a young singer by the name of Frankie Sardo and the New Crickets at that time. And they had made a decision to go on with the show, and they asked for some local talent to help fill in. We offered our services, and they didn't ask any questions. They just said, come on down, and we waited in the wings until they wanted us on stage. We were the second or third act, I think, on the show. And we were just there to help out.
Did you ever meet Buddy?
Never did. I certainly have recorded with the Crickets, his band, again, back in the early 60s, and we've remained friends. I was part of an album called Crickets Buddies that came out in 2003.
When you perform on a show like that, obviously, you want to give the best performance you possibly can, but it must have been with such a heavy heart.
Well, really, the show should have been canceled. I think that no one knew what to do. The radio station, they were all young guys there, and they asked Tommy Alsop, and Waylon Jennings was playing bass for Holly at that time. He was on that tour. And they said, well, let's do it. Let's do the show. That's the way Buddy would like it. And that was it. They went on with the show. And we weren't looking for a career, but there was a fellow in the audience that night that came up afterwards. He was a local booking agent. He said, boy, guys did a great job.
And that led you to getting the contract with Soma Records for your first
album. Yeah.
Bobby, I know you have millions of fans throughout the world. Your website gets an incredible number of visits. And before we go any further, we could mention it briefly, www.bobbyvee.com,
BobbyVee.com. .com.
I am Ronnie Allen, and I am so pleased to have Bobby V on the phone. I want to get to your very first top 40 hit, Devil or Angel. The song was one that had been done by a group called the Clovers. How did you get to hear the song? How did you get to do it?
When I signed with Liberty, we signed on for, I think it was three records and an album. Susie Baby was first, and then there was a song called What Do You Want, and then we did a song called One Last Kiss. Those were the three singles. And we went into the studio to record an album, and that was Snuffy's recommendation. I had never heard the song before, and I'd listened to the record, beautiful record. So we recorded that, and it took a while to start getting airplay. You know, when you don't have a hit, you don't get the airplay. But there was a station in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that picked it up and started playing it on a regular basis. That became the pivot point for that song.
1956, it got to number three on the R&B charts by the Clovers in that year. And the pop recording by you, Devil or Angel, got to number six on the chart. Not too shabby for a debut top 40 hit. And
we actually got into the top 20 rhythm and blues charts as well.
I didn't know that. We're going to listen to it right now. This is Bobby V and his first top 40 hit, Devil or Angel.
Devil or angel, I can't make up my mind. Which one you are, I'd like to wake up and find. Devil or angel, dear, whichever you are, I miss you, I miss you. I miss you. Devil or angel, please say you'll be mine. Love me or leave me, I'll go out of my mind. Devil or angel, dear, whichever you are, I need you, I need you, I need you. You look like an angel, your smile is divine. But you keep me guessing, will you ever be mine? Devil or angel, please say you'll be mine. Love me or leave me, I've made up my mind. Devil or angel, dear, whichever you are, I love you, I love you. I love you. Devil or angel, please say you'll be mind. Love me or leave me, I've made up my mind. Devil or angel, dear, whichever you are, I love you, I love you, I love you.
Devil or angel, Bobby V, the one that really started it all, of course. Susie Baby was a coming attraction. This was really the real deal. Top 40 hit, got to number 6 on the chart.
I remember standing on the corner of Hollywood and Vine, and the record was on its way. It was getting play on KFWB out in Los Angeles, and it looked like it was going to be a hit. I think it was up in the top 40 at that point. And it was cruising night. It was a Friday night, and I was watching the cars go by, and I saw an old Mercury, and right underneath the back window, they used to do that in those days, they would name their car, and underneath the passenger rear window, it said Devil or Angel, and I thought, oh boy, here we go. But that really was the one that started it for me, and the follow-up to that was entirely different. Devil or Angel was just a love ballad, slow dance, last chance for romance kind of song. And then Rubber Ball came out. It was written by Aaron Schroeder and Gene Pitney. And the funny little story that goes along with it, Gene Pitney was a ASCAP writer, if I remember this right, and Schroeder was a BMI writer. And in those days, you couldn't write for both associations. So he put his mother's name on the record and signed her up as a BMI writer.
Are you talking about Gene Pitney put his mother's name? Which
That's right.
Orlowski, I believe it is.
Ann Orlowski.
Ann Orlowski.
So that great, great hit all over the world. And it was always in his mother's name. And he used to love to tease her. He'd say, Mom, he said, you're going to have to learn how to play this song. He said, I'll teach it to you, but you're going to have to learn because the BMI people, the BMI police may come out here.
There'll be a knock on the door. Knock, knock, knock. Okay, you're under arrest.
Oh, she would laugh and say, oh, Gene, you know, he was just pulling her chain.
But actually, that was written by Gene Pitney.
Yes, it was written by Gene.
Despite what it says on the record label. And we're going to listen to it right now. Bouncy, 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 bouncy. Bobby V and Rubber Ball.
Rubber ball, I come bouncing back to you. Rubber ball, I come bouncing back to you. I'm like a rubber ball, baby. That's all that I am to you.
Bouncy, 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 bouncy.
Just a rubber ball, cause you think you can be true to two.
Bouncy, bouncy.
You bounce my heart around.
You don't even put her down.
And like a rubber ball, I come bouncing back to you. Rubber ball, I come bouncing back to you. If you stretch my love till it's thin enough to tear, I just stretch my arms to reach you anywhere. And when I'm a shoulder, you do tap.
Bouncy, 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 bouncy.
Just a rubber band because my heartstrings, they just snap.
Bouncy, bouncy, bouncy.
You go and squeeze me till I'm all aflame.
She calls you by some other guy's name.
Like a rubber ball, I come bouncing back to you. Rubber ball, I come bouncing back to you. Rubber ball, I come bouncing back to you. Rubber ball, I'll come bouncing back to you. Rubber ball, I'll come bouncing back to you. Rubber ball, I'll come bouncing back to you.
That was the first Rubber Ball song to become a big hit. Later on, there was a song about a red rubber ball by Circle, but it was a totally different song. You remember?
Yes, right. A wonderful record, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally. And that song, you know who wrote that song, Red Rubber Ball?
Paul Simon, I think.
Absolutely. Right.
I'll tell you a funny story, too. And in England, I started going over to England about the time of Rubber Ball, and there were three versions in the top 20. There was a group called the Avons that had covered it, and Marty Wilde, still performing in England, a great friend and wonderful artist, and he had a version of it, and mine was also in the top 20.
I used to work for Casey Kasem's American Top 40, and after I stopped working for the show, I made the acquaintance of a gentleman named Rob Durkee, who wrote a book about American Top 40 called American Top 40, The Countdown of the Century. And I think it was Rob Durkee who told you a story that I guess he presented to Casey or something or other about how at the time Stayin' In was the only top 40 hit ever written about a detention.
It was an odd song. It really was. It was written by John D. Loudermilk.
Well, he writes odd songs. John D. Loudermilk, yes.
Yeah, wonderful writer, you know, down in Nashville and written stuff for the Everly Brothers. And
Sue Thompson? Yes. Almost all of Sue Thompson's hit.
Yeah, it was just, he always had odd subject matter, and this was one of them. And it's opened the opening line, "I punch my buddy in the nose after lunch." And boy, if that didn't get your attention, I don't know what would. But the song shows you what a different world we're living in. That was, you know, 45 years ago or 45 plus. It actually was banned on some radio stations for advocating violence. And it really, it's just a cute novelty kind of song, and I love the song.
I punched my buddy in the nose after lunch. Now I'm in trouble, 'cause the dean saw the punch. He was telling things that were not true about her, so I let him have it in the cafeteria. Now I'm staying in, staying in, while my baby's walking home with him. They passed my window hand in hand just then, but what can I do, 'cause I'm staying in. If she just knew what that son of a gun said, I know she wouldn't be caught with him dead. She don't know what he has got up his sleeve, but she would find out if I could only leave. But I'm staying in, staying in, while my baby's walking home with him. I did it then, and I'd do it again. I love her so, but I'm staying in.
That was Bobby V and Staying In. How many top 100 hits did you have?
38. Top 100, right.
38 top 100 hits, and let me see, we got about 14 top 40 hits in Billboard.
Right, yeah.
We're going to play most of them today, including this next one, which, as far as the record charts are concerned, was your biggest hit of all. Later on in the show, I think you're going to tell us that one of your other recordings may have actually outsold it. But this one made number one on the chart, and the name of the song is what?
Take Good Care of My Baby.
The song was written by Jerry Goffin and Carole King. Superstar songwriters, even before you used the term superstar.
Well, they were. I mean, it was the Brill Building. That's where all the hits were coming from. Doc Pomus and Mort Shuman were writing songs for Elvis. Ben Wiseman, of course, who wrote The Night Is a Thousand Eyes. Carole and Jerry were writing songs for the Everly Brothers and the Chiffons and the Shirelles. Barry Mann, Cynthia Weil. There were just so many. And they were, everybody was young. They were all teenagers or early 20s and cranking out the hits. And they had little cubicles up in Alden Music, later became Screen Gems. And the writers would go in, and they were little 6 feet by 4 feet, just enough to get a piano in there. And they would hang around those little rooms, and there would be four or five little cubicles, and they'd all be working on songs.
Neil Sedaka was in that bunch, too.
That's right. Howie Greenfield, his writing partner.
Right.
Bobby Darin was part of that. Tony Orlando was part of the Brill Building. Yeah, it's a huge list of people that were young and pounding out the hits.
The song Take Good Care of My Baby, was that written for you or for somebody else or for nobody in particular?
Actually, Dion did a version of it, I think around the same time that I did mine, and it didn't come out for quite a long time. But we had sort of struck up a relationship with Carol and Jerry. I recorded a song called How Many Tears that wasn't a huge hit, but that was the first time that I met them. They came to the session when I was recording How Many Tears, and we took a break, and Carol sat down at the piano and sang a couple of songs for me, and one of them was Take Good Care of My Baby. They flew out to present the song, and we said, well, we'll take it, and we recorded it a couple of weeks later, and it was an instant hit when it came out. Everybody was playing it at the same time.
One of the most distinctive things about that recording is your little introduction to it, My Tears Are Falling. Was that really part of the song initially, or?
It wasn't. When Dion recorded it, apparently that was not on there. Snuffy takes credit for that. We both loved the song, but he just felt like it needed to be set up. And I think that he was right. You know, my tears are falling because you've taken her away. And though it really hurts me so, there's something that I've got to say. Bum, 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 take good care. And I think he was right. It needed to be set up. It really set up the storyline for the song.
My tears are falling because you've taken her away. And though it really hurts me so, there's something that I've got to say. Take good care of my baby. Please don't ever make her blue. Just tell her that you love her. Make sure you're thinking of her in everything you say and do. Take good care of my baby. Now don't you ever make her cry. Just let your love surround her. Paint a rainbow all around her. Don't let her see a cloudy sky. Once upon a time, if I'd been true, I know she'd never be with you. So take good care of my baby. Be just as kind as you can be. And if you should discover that you don't really love her, just send my baby back home to.
Take Good Care of My Baby. Definitely, that was a Brill Building song, wasn't it? Take Good Care of My Baby, when you say Brill Building.
It was. It was the second number one record for Carole King and Jerry Goffin.
And the first one was...
Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow?
Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow. And eventually they had Go Away, Little Girl.
That's right.
That was a year later. I want to mention about the Brill Building. The Brill Building is one of the features on the website, which I am associated with, called Jersey Girl Sing. And it is jerseygirlsing.com. jerseygirlsing.com. This interview is going to be permanently on that website, on my Ronnie's Radio page. You just visit the home page and click on Ronnie's Radio page and click on Bobby V Special, and there you are. You'll hear the whole show anytime you want, anywhere in the world. Well, you have a number one hit. It stayed number one for 3 weeks on the Billboard chart, and you needed a follow-up to that, and you followed up with a song called Run to Him. But in many respects, this was kind of an accidental hit for you.
It was. It's really a funny story. Snuffy Garrett, we were all based in Los Angeles, Liberty Records, and Snuffy used to go at least once a month. He would fly to New York, and he'd go to the Brill Building and meet with the publishers, and they would load him up with demos of songs that had been written for his artists. And, you know, he had several artists, Gene McDaniels and Johnny Burnett and Vicky Carr and myself and Buddy Knox and the Crickets. He had quite a stable of acts, so he would spend some time there. And Don Kirshner, who was the head of Alden Music, said, I've got some songs for Bobby V when you get into town here. He said, I'm not going to be here, but just go over to the office, and there'll be a stack of demos, and it'll say Bobby V on top of it, and just take the demos and bring them back to L.A. and let me know what you think. And when Snuffy got there, there it was. There was a stack of demo songs written for me, and right next to it was a stack for the Everly Brothers. And he took them both and got back to Los Angeles, and we started listening to these songs and came upon Run to Him. He said, oh, my goodness, what a great song. What an amazing lyric. And we went right into the studio. I mean, almost immediately, a couple days later, we were in the recording studio recording the song. And when it was done, Snuffy called up Don Kirshner and played him the record. And, of course, Kirshner fell down. He said, you know, that was for the Everly Brothers. What are you doing with it? And in the end, it turned out to be just a good giggle. They were good friends, and he just wanted a hit record.
Well, you couldn't unrecord it by that time. You had spent all this time doing it. Did the Everly Brothers ever record that song?
They never did. No, they didn't. They have recorded a lot of Brill Building songs, as you probably know. Crying in the Rain and a number of Carol and Jerry songs.
Well, we're going to listen to it right now. This got to number two on the chart, Bobby V and Run to Him.
If you found another guy who satisfies you more than I do, run to him. I'll step aside. If you think his lips can kiss you better than my lips can kiss you, run to him. Forget my pride. If someone else's arms can hold you better than my arms can hold you, go to him and show to him all your devotion. If somebody else can make you happier than I can make you, run to him. My tears will dry. If someone else's arms can hold you better than my arms can hold you, go to him and show to him all your devotion. If somebody else can make you happier than I can make you, run to him. My tears will dry. If it's me you want to love you, I'll be more than glad to love you. Love you till your life is done. But darling, if I'm not the one, then run to
Bobby, I'm not going to pretend that you don't already know this, because some people may remember the radio interview that I did with you about 5 years ago, but you remember I was asking you about a song called The Lion Sleeps Tonight, and you told me how much you love that song by The Tokens.
Oh, it's a great, it is a wonderful record. I think that it would probably be in everybody's top 10 for
absolutely
all-time records.
The problem was, it was, at that time, it was on everybody's number one, while Run to Him was number two, and that was the one that kept yours out. And I'm not going to pretend that this is a surprise to you, because people are going to know it wasn't. 5 years ago, I asked you, did you like that song? Oh, yeah. And then I said, well, that's the one that kept you out of number one spot. And you said, oh, I hate that song. I remember that. Now we're going to talk about a song called Walking with My Angel, which was actually the flip side of Run to Him. And I understand that something very funny happened regarding this particular song, Walking with My Angel. What was that very funny thing that happened?
I'll tell you, timing is everything. We were doing a show in Wisconsin. It was a big cattle show. And so during the afternoon, the buyers were out there bidding on these cows and the world of dairy, you know, Wisconsin. And that evening, we were to perform. And so I was up doing my set, and I was singing Walking with My Angel, and it was clip, clop, clip, clop. And all of a sudden, in the back of the room, I could see some commotion going on, and there were people that were dancing and were having a good old time. And a cow had gotten loose and was coming through and came into the room. And I swear to goodness, he was dancing to the music. The cow was moving, flip, bob, ain't no guy in town. And it was all enough. People were, you know, heading for the doors, and they finally got the cow out of there.
So what was your reaction? Were you laughing your way through it as it was
happening? I was up on stage. You know, I was fine. But the people were freaking out.
Did you know exactly what was happening when it was happening?
I didn't know what was happening. I saw some commotion. And all of a sudden I saw a cow, and he kind of did a U right through the crowd and went out the back door.
Well, all you people listening to this show, and also all you cows out there listening to this show, let's really stomp.
Cows love my...
Cows love Bobby V's music. And especially this particular song, Walking with My Angel. Well, if cows bought records, that would have been the bigger hit.
It would have been.
But since it's people that buy records, Run to Him got to number 2 on the chart. Walking with My Angel didn't make the top 40, but it was a top 100 hit.
It was.
In a lot of areas of the country, it was actually a top 40 record. Now we have a song that was the victim of bad timing. And the song is called Please Don't Ask About Barbara. And the bad timing had to do with Dick Clark.
Record came out, I think, you might have the information there, but it was right around 1962.
It was exactly 1962.
Again, another Brill Building song. It's a wonderful little record. It's a little Love Lost song. And I was on a Dick Clark show out in Ohio, and the record was brand new. And I did the song, and Dick was standing on the side of the stage, and kind of with his arms crossed, and he was looking at me, and I came off stage. He said, "What did you put that out for?" And I thought, "Let's hate the songs." I said, "Well, it's my new record. Why?" He said, "Oh, never mind." And I didn't realize that he was in the throes of a divorce with his wife, Barbara. And God bless Dick. He's been a great friend to all of us over the years and has done so much for rock and roll. And he's doing much better. after his stroke. But he was going through it, and that song never got played on American Bandstand.
Had you known in advance that this record was not going to get played on Bandstand, would you have chosen a different single, you think?
As I said, timing is everything, and the best marketing you could get was to be on American Bandstand. It was the show.
So, who knows? It did get to number 15 on the chart, but it probably would have been a top 10 record with Bandstand play. And one side note about this song, I don't know if you're aware of, one of the writers of Please Don't Ask About Barbara is Bill Buchanan. And if the name Bill Buchanan does not sound familiar, maybe if I say Buchanan and Goodman, The Flying Saucer.
Right.
There you go. Same Bill Buchanan, a writer of that song.
Kind of hard to imagine, isn't it? Going from the Flying Saucer song to Ask About Barbara, two different ends of the spectrum.
Please Don't Ask About Barbara, Bobby V. The stories behind each of these hits kind of adds a dimension. Every one of your singles has an interesting story.
Well, and I can thank you at the same time for helping to keep rock and roll alive and well. You're doing a wonderful job. Appreciate it.
Now we're going to talk about a song called The Night Has a Thousand Eyes. And one of the things that songwriters love is when you do their material. They may not be that crazy about it if you mess up a line. You actually messed up a line. You told me this years ago. You actually messed up a line in the song, but you left it in the record. Did the songwriter ever forgive you?
Well, I'll set it up a little bit by reminding people that up until about 1963, 64, just about everything was done live in the studios. All my records were done live, and we would typically record four songs in a three-hour time period we would book in the studio.
Mm.
And we almost always walked out of there with four songs. The Night of a Thousand Eyes, written by Ben Wiseman, was the fourth song scheduled on the session, not because we thought the least of it, but it just worked out that way. And we had 12 minutes left to record this song, and Ben was at the session, and don't ever invite a songwriter to the session because they'll drive you nuts. And he was pacing back and forth, and we were getting ready to do the first run-through on Thousand Eyes, and he said, "You're not going to have time to finish this, Bobby." And I said, "Yeah, no, we got it. It'll be fine." We did a couple of start stops, and then we got a take, and then we got another one, and we said, "Well, we've got it." We said, "Well, we'll just do one more," and the session was over. We had the take. We had the version that came out on record. It was terrific. We all were excited about it, except for Ben. He said, "You got to do one more take. You got to do one more take." And I said, "Ben, what's the matter? What happened?" He said, "You've been singing a wrong word in there. In the last verse, it's one of the days you're going to be crying, and you sang, one of these days you're going to be sorry. It doesn't rhyme. It's not going to work. It's got to rhyme." And everybody just looked at him like he was nuts. And, of course, we didn't do another take on it because it was such a good take. And no one ever mentioned that to me except Ben. God rest his soul.
But you mentioned it to me. Ben passed away relatively recently.
Yes. Yeah, and I would talk to Ben every now and then, and he would always say, yeah, Thousand Eyes, Thousand Eyes. A big hit, but it could have been huge.
Now,
could have been huge.
Just so that people understand, one of these days you're going to be crying was the actual line to rhyme with, you'll find out without really trying. Is that what it was?
Right.
So sorry does not rhyme with trying.
Right.
That's the problem.
They say that you're a runaround lover, though you say it isn't so. But if you put me down for another, I'll know, believe me, I'll know. 'Cause a night has a thousand eyes, and a thousand eyes can't help but see if you are true to me. So remember when you tell those little white lies that the night has a thousand eyes. You say that you're at home when you phone me, and how much you really care. Though you keep telling me that you're lonely, I'll know if someone is the night has a thousand eyes, and a thousand eyes can't help but see if you are true to me. So remember when you tell those little white lies that the night has a thousand eyes. One of these days you're gonna be sorry, 'cause your game I'm gonna play. And you find out without really trying, each time that my kiss is spray. 'Cause the night has a thousand eyes, and a thousand eyes will see me through. And no,
Bobby, I got to ask you one question about that. Did Ben Weissman ever forgive you? Okay, because the record got to number three on the chart, did he say, all is forgiven, you're fine? Or did he say it would have gotten to number one if you did it right?
Well, that's what he thought. That's what
it would have been a bigger hit. Would have been a bigger hit if you had sung Crying as I Wrote It instead of Sorry.
Right.
Anyway, I'm Ronnie Allen, and this is just so much fun. We got three more songs to go. We're going to move now to a song called Charms. Came out in 1963.
I get a lot of requests for it. It was in the top 20, got a lot of airplay. It's a wonderful sounding record. I love the sound of it and the sentiment. It's about young love. You know, most of these songs are. This one certainly is. And what it's like to be 16 years old and to have your first girlfriend or your first boyfriend or go out to on your first New Year's Eve party together. It's really locked in time. It's a lovely song.
Pretty charms, pretty little charms, see how they sparkle in the sun. Ding dong ding, listen to them ring, they seem to be telling everyone that you're my baby. With a twist of your wrist it can be told, you're my baby. There it is, in 14 karat golden. Pretty charms, pretty little charms, starting from the day we met. Your sweet 16, the moment in between, that New Year's Eve we won't forget. So if some guy should ask you if someday you're free, wave him away with the wave of your arms. Do as
I say, just blind him with your charms and show him you belong. Some guy should ask you if some night you're free, wave him away with the wave of your arms. Do what I say, just blind him with your charms and show him you belong.
That was Charms by Bobby V. We got time for a couple more recordings. And this next one is the one that sold more copies than any of your other recordings. It only got to number 3, but it actually sold more copies than Take Good Care of My Baby, which got to number 1. Am I correct?
You are. I think records were just selling better at that time. You know, the Beatles had made their mark. They were still in the process of making their mark. This was 1967. Motown was going strong. The San Francisco flower power era was going strong. The Monkees had just come out. There was a lot of exciting stuff that was getting played, and I think the records were just selling better than they had. And Come Back When You Grow Up was such a subtle, quiet little record. It was a nice message. A young girl fancies this, you know, maybe a couple year older guy, and he's saying to her, you know, he likes everything about her. She's just too young. And that's the point of the song, Come Back When You Grow Up, Girl, You're Still Living in a Paper Doll World. The record came out and started getting play in secondary markets like Green Bay, Wisconsin, and Billings, Montana, and Spartanburg, South Carolina. And it wasn't just getting play, it was moving up the charts. And in each one of those markets, it had gone to number 1. But we couldn't get a major station on it. And by then, the record had been out for 2 months. And we decided to reissue it as a new record.
Oh, that's unusual.
We took out an ad in Billboard and mentioned the markets that I just mentioned to you. And number 1 record. And that was enough to get us some airplay in Chicago. Toledo and Cleveland started playing it, and little by little, the record started going up the charts. And that record started in February, I think, the first issue of it, or March.
Yeah,
and by September, October, it was still being played on the East Coast.
Yep.
It took the whole year, but it did turn out to be the biggest record I've ever had.
Come back when you grow up, girl. You're still living in a paper doll world. Living ain't easy, loving's twice as tough. So come back, baby, when you grow up. You're looking real good like a woman now. Your mind hasn't gotten the message somehow. So if you can't take it, the going gets rough. Come back, baby, when you grow up. I want you, girl, but your wide-eyed innocence has really messed up my mind, yeah. I'd rather you get your very first heartbreak somewhere else along the line. Come back when you grow up, girl. You're still living in a paper doll world. Someday be a woman ready to love. Come back, baby, when you grow up. Come back when you grow up, girl. You're still living in a paper doll world. Living ain't easy, loving's twice as tough. Come back, baby, when you grow up. Come back when you grow up, girl. You've still got a lot of time left in the world. You'll someday be a woman ready to love. Come back, baby, when you grow up. When you grow up, girl, you're still living. paper doll world. Living ain't easy, loving's twice as tough. So come back, baby, when you grow up. Come back when you grow up, girl. You're still living in a paper doll world.
That was Come Back When You Grow Up by Bobby V, and I'm Ronnie Allen, and I came back, but I got to tell you, Bobby, I have not grown up. I am 12 going on 13.
There's a part of us that will never grow up. We love the music, and when I go back and listen to my old records, not mine personally, but some of them, the Beatles or whoever it is, there's a lot of good music.
We mentioned you have a website, www.bobbyv.com, that is BobbyVee.com. You've put out some recordings over the last few years, and if you'd like to discuss any of them, the floor is yours right now.
Yeah, if anyone is interested, they can go to the site and they'll see some of the product we've put out in the last few years. Actually, this year, there's a collection of songs. It's Bobby V, the singles collection, and that was issued in the UK, and it's a package that has 95 songs on it, and every single that I put out from 1959 up till about 1978, and my whole life on vinyl.
Oh, it must be. Are there outtakes there, too?
No outtakes. That would have been another CD, but we'll save that for another time.
Oh, you did have outtakes. You just didn't put them on a CD yet.
Yes, right. We'll do another one. And I also, just a few months ago, recorded a song for a young lady by the name of Sandra Boynton, and she's a very successful writer of children's books, and she's gotten into doing music for children, and she called us up and asked if we would do a song for her issue. It's a beautiful book. The box is called Blue Moo, and there's a cow. Maybe that's why she called me. Maybe she was there then.
Here we go again with the cows.
Yes, it's coming back to me now, right. Maybe my whole life is going to be cows. But anyway, we recorded a song that she wrote called With You, and it's a beautiful song.
Yeah.
I'll tell you some of the other people that are on this collection. B.B. King is on it. Brian Wilson of Beach Boys, of course. He's singing a song called Speed Turtle. Yeah, right. But it's all for young kids, and it's beautifully illustrated, and we're proud to be part of it. And other than that, I'm working in Branson at the Dick Clark Theater. It's absolutely a wonderful theater, great stage, wonderful sound system, great lighting. It's the newest theater in Branson, and it's the first original artist rock and roll theater. I'm there with Fabian and Chris Montez, Brian Hyland, and the Chiffons, and we're all friends. Having the time of my life. Yeah, my sons are there. They're backing the show. My son, Jeffrey, is a drummer, and Tommy is the bass player. And I'll just mention that Jeff just had a little baby just exactly 1 week ago, a little girl. We're thrilled for him, and this is our fourth grandchild. And Robbie is the youngest son. He's out on his own. He's got his own band. And it's interesting. I mean, they all grew up listening to my record collection, you know, the Buddy Holly and Eddie Cochran and all that stuff. And they all love rockabilly music. And Robbie is out doing a complete rockabilly show.
There was a rumor that at some point Bob Dylan was a part of your band and supposedly you fired him. Maybe you could set the record straight on that. What exactly happened?
Well, the only part of that that isn't true is that we didn't fire him. He had come down to Fargo, where I grew up, and we had mutual friends, and he was staying with. We were looking for a piano player, and my brother Bill was in a record store, Sam's Recordland, and Bob approached him and introduced himself, and he said, "I hear you're looking for a piano player." He said, "I just got off the road with Conway Twitty," and Bill was over the moon. He took him over to a radio station and had him play a little bit, and Bill came home that day, and he said, "I think we found a guy." He had introduced himself as Elston Gunn. That's the name that
Elston
was his
Gunn.
Business name.
All right.
And I said, "Well, tell me about it." He said, "Well, he played Jerry Lee Lewis's whole lot of Shake Me going on. He just was rocking." And it turned out that that was about the only song he knew. He only played in the key of C.
Oh, that's kind of limiting, isn't it?
So anyway, he was with us just for a very short period of time, and we didn't have enough money to buy him a piano, and he didn't have a piano. You know, we were playing church basements and little teen centers that had these horribly out-of-tune pianos. Yeah, it's a fun story. He left and went to the University of Minnesota, and a very short time later ended up out in New York. And here he is today, Bob Dylan.
It was kind of just a mutual agreement that you weren't able to keep him on. Is that what happened, basically?
Yeah. I've seen him a few times over the years, and he's a wonderful guy. Well, a career he's had.
Tabloid mentality. People want to hear scandals. I don't think there's any scandals ever associated with you, except I punched my buddy in the nose. That's about that's about the biggest Bobby V scandal. I punched my buddy in the nose. What kind of a message does that send to people?
Oh, what a boring life I've led.
Oh, yeah. Bobby, I have enjoyed this more than I can say.
Very nice. Thank you. I like that, how you played that played that right in.
Speaking of which, and incidentally, by the way, I appreciate everything you told me about the cows, and I'm going to milk that for all it's worth when I put the show together. But let's talk about the song, More Than I Can Say. A lot of people remember the song because Leo Sayer took it to number two on the chart. The song is written by Jerry Allison and Sonny Curtis.
Although it wasn't a hit for me in America, it was a huge hit for me in England and Australia and China. Still one of my favorite songs of all the songs that I've recorded, and I'm just proud that I had a chance to do that.
These days you close all of your shows with it?
Yeah, I just, you know, it's just a beautiful sentiment. I love you more than I can say. I'll love you twice as much tomorrow. I'll love you more than I can say.
Whoa, whoa, yeah, yeah. Love you more than I can say. I'll love you twice as much tomorrow. Whoa, whoa, love you more than I can say. Whoa, oh, yeah, yeah. I miss you every single day. Why must my life be filled with sorrow? Whoa, whoa, love you more than I can say. Don't you know I need you so? Tell me, please, I gotta know. Do you mean to make me cry? Am I just another guy? Whoa, oh, yeah, yeah. Love you more than I can say. I'll love you twice as much tomorrow. Whoa, whoa, love you more than I can say. Don't you know I need you so? Tell me, please, I gotta know. Do you mean to make me cry? Am I just another guy? Whoa, whoa, yeah, yeah. I love you more than I can say. I'll love you twice as much tomorrow. Whoa, whoa, love you more than I can say.
Well, that's the show. I hope you enjoyed it. Now a couple of Bobby V bonus tracks. First, this one that Bobby mentioned during the show, written by Carole King and Jerry Goffin, How Many Tears?
How many tears can you cry when you're sad and lonely? Now how many tears can you cry when someone makes you blue? That's the question I'm still unable to answer.
Cause I can't stop my love for you.
And finally, here's a song that some people know as Armin's theme. When Bobby V sang it, it was Yesterday and You.
I sit alone in this cafe and listen to the jukebox play, reminding me of yesterday and you. Each moment was a valentine. You promised you'd be always mine, and I believe the words you said were true. I see your face, it's everywhere. I close my eyes, but you're still there, reminding me of things we used to do. I wonder what your heart is saying when you hear a jukebox playing the song that brings me yesterday and you.